rest stop. Even with the windows down, the inside of the van baked and simmered. The heater was on full blast, trying to cool the engine, and still the temperature needle quivered into the red, the desert defeating the van's attempts to cool itself. I had to stop. Barely even going the legal minimum, I pulled off the highway and into a rest stop, 30 miles or so from the California border. The rest stop appeared ancient, as if constructed from the remains of an old west way station left out here in the desert after the pioneers rolled on. The parking lot encircled a hill, covered with brown dirt and brown plants, here and there a hardier plant struggling toward the color green. It was futile. There was no humidity, and there hadn't been rain in months. The hood billowed hot smoke as soon as I opened it, sickly sweet steam that left me coughing and covering my mouth with the back of my arm. The antifreeze reservoir boiled over and spilled its contents all over the black pavement, the green liquid glistening in the sunlight, pooling between the tires. The radiator was less than 1,000 miles old. It didn't matter. Everything else was going too. The gas tank, the oil pan, the transmission fluid, I imagined them waiting their turn. So many things inside my van, and all of them wanting to get out. The rest stop was just a small building on a hill, consisting of 2 bathrooms, pushed back to back, one side for the men, one for the women. I left the hood cracked open and headed up, my bladder full and pressing, not seeing anything besides the sign steering me to the right. I drank too much the night before, my last in New Mexico, and too much this morning as I struggled to fight back a hangover. All the way across Arizona, I had smoked cigarettes to quell the nausea, and the taste in my mouth only made it worse. Sickness grew in my guts. There was nothing I could do. I sat on the dirty stainless steel toilet seat and read the graffiti carved into the walls of the stall. There was so much writing, so many illustrations, it seemed as if every person who'd ever been here had left something behind. Will gives head for money. Joey gives head. Sean gives head. Your girlfriend gives head. Everyone was giving head. It seemed the only person who wasn't giving head was Jesus, who was still mentioned so much, it wouldn't have surprised me if he lived nearby, hiding out in the desert. I pictured him come in at night to rest under the single bare light bulb, to take a piss, and read all the messages left for him on the walls. The walls assured me that Jesus loved me, and that God was real, that all niggers would hang, and possibly the Mexicans too. The Japs and Jews and Chinks would be next. The bathroom stall stank, a smell that stuck in my nostrils like the graffiti stuck in my brain. I spat a mouthful of hot saliva onto the ground near the stall door, my mouth full of a taste I couldn't get out. A voice spoke on the other side of the divider. For a confused second, I thought it was directed at me, until I heard another man respond. "Semper Fi," he said. Both men were at the twin urinals outside my stall. 55th Division? All through the war, replied the other. Heading to the reunion? Of course, wouldn't miss it. We met a lot of people going the same way, kind of all caravanning together. Me and the wife are in an RV. Maybe we'll join up. That'd be great, said the first. I heard him clap the other man on the shoulder and wondered about what I couldn't see. Were the two men standing at the urinals, talking and shaking hands, hugging like brothers? It was all too much. Time to get out. I wiped my hands on the back of my jeans and headed for the door without looking. In my rush to the bathroom, I hadn't noticed the line of motorhomes, but there they were, 6 or 7 in a row at the base of the hill. At the door stood elderly men in red t-shirts with yellow lettering, fatter and balder and slower than when they'd been Marines storming some unpronounceable South Pacific island. Now they stood with their arms crossed, driving glasses on, wives at their side, looking like they might never move again. Coming down the hill, I headed for the payphone, situated between the RVs and the stairs leading up to the bathrooms. I could still see fluid dripping from my engine, and since I couldn't leave, I decided to call home. I don't know why, except that it'd been months since I'd talked to her, and now that I was so close, I'd be in California within the hour, Santa Monica by night. I wanted to hear my wife's voice to tell her I was going to make it. I couldn't wait until the ocean, although I knew I should. What I wanted to tell her was that I hadn't left because of what I did to her, or what she did to me. This wasn't about what we had or hadn't done, not now that we were 3,000 miles apart. Out here, everything was finally going to change. Reality got wax paper thin, and although I couldn't see the other side, I often knew it was there. Other things I knew. I had a boiling radiator and a twisted stomach. My left arm was burned red and raw from the sun coming through the window while I drove. Thoughts whirled in my mind and refused to settle, carried on a desert breeze that sighed and sputtered, disappearing before you could even feel it. Everything was resting and anxious. I was no different. A couple stood using the payphone, disconnected from the caravan of veterans heading west. I skulked around, close enough to stake my claim. I overheard them talking. They were hauling horses, and I identified their truck and trailer parked down the sidewalk, just past my van, talking to their kids from the sound of their conversation. I wandered back and forth beneath the merciless sun, feeling the heat burning my skin, cooking the rot in my stomach. I put my hands on my belly and felt my stomach clench beneath them, up the hill and back into the bathroom. There was more graffiti to hide my brain in as my body worked below me, poorly drawn pictures of breasts and penises with impossibly hanging testicles, sexual acts imagined ways that could not possibly exist. The message, Ted was here. So was Bob and Louie and all the others. Someone had written California or bus and meant it, penned it in a thin scrawl above the toilet paper dispenser. The markings, the droppings of some unknown tribe passing from state to state, from desert to desert. We were only miles from the California border, and all these people had stopped here to wait, as if they needed some small push to go any further. I understood completely. Back outside, the horse haulers were still on the telephone, and my van was still overheated. The sun was still hot and blistered, blasting the clouds from the blue sky before they could fully form. My eyes ached from the sharp spikes of sunlight entering from every angle. I went and stood beside the couple on the telephone again, listening to them talk. I waited and waited. They finished one call and immediately began another. As the woman talked, I tapped the man on the shoulder. "I'm waiting to use the telephone," I said. "Will only be a minute," he replied. The man was going bald. He wore a lime green tank top and sunglasses, held on with a bright yellow cord wrapped around his neck, the kind baseball players wear. His wife was a bad bleached blonde with a leather tan. No one could have liked them. "You've already been a minute. I don't have all day." He didn't believe my bluff for a moment. It was obvious that there was no hurry. Something about this place, this rest stop, this desert way station. Everything was static. The RVs hadn't moved at all. Neither had their senior citizen guards, and neither had this couple that would not get off the fucking telephone. I felt a panic growing beside the nausea in my belly, and because I didn't know what else to do, I wandered lamely back uphill to splash water from a drinking fountain over my face and neck. The coolness only lasted a moment before the sun burned it away. Down the stairs, the woman hung up the telephone. I hurried toward them, but it was too late. They were already making another call. "I thought you said you were almost done," I said. "Listen, buddy." All pretense of friendliness was gone from the man's voice. "Why don't you buzz off? We'll be done when we're done. I need to use the phone. You've been on it forever. It's my turn." "Says who?" "No one says so. Just me." "What are you going to do about it?" "Man, I could do anything to you." I don't know why I said it. I stared at him, pointed a finger, made a face. He stared back, then shook his head. "I'm not listening to this. Go away." I knew I wouldn't hit him or yell or do anything else, so I started to walk away, my head full of black thoughts. I should have, though, punched the man, and maybe the woman too. I should have just left the rest stop completely. Instead, I hung my head and skulked down the sidewalk. I'd gone only a half dozen steps before I saw it, across the median of blasted grass and sand and rock. A gleam coming down the highway, a shining line of tour buses, three or four or more. They were pulling into the rest stop, all parking in a row opposite from the RVs. My van and the horse trailer were trapped in between, the captive audience for whatever was meant to happen next. The tour buses stopped in a synchronized motion, too perfect to be real, and all at once I understood what was happening. I'd wandered into a dream. Mine or someone else's, it didn't matter. I stood still as hordes of Japanese tourists of all ages moved past me, around me, heading up the hill wearing Yankees caps and Levi's and thick black eyeglasses. Cameras hung from their many necks, and as they climbed the hill, I heard the steady click of camera shutters. The tourists were shooting the desert landscape, the interior of the country, recording it for their scrapbooks back in Tokyo or wherever, remembering it better than my poor brain could ever manage. I turned and watched as they swarmed up the hill. I smoked my cigarette as they lined up outside the bathrooms divided by sex. I listened to their voices chattering in Japanese, a language I'd never heard outside of the movies. I realized I'd never really heard anything besides English, except maybe a little Spanish, here and there back in Michigan, more since I'd been out west. I closed my eyes and threw back my head, blew smoke from my lips, listened to the sound so bizarre here on the edge of California, here in the middle of this thing, this wild America, drunk on her own juices. "I can't hear you," said the woman, holding one hand over her free ear. "We'll call you from California." The Japanese seemed to chatter even louder, all around me. A cigarette hung from my mouth as I clapped for them, cheering them on. A smile clung to my face, because now there was no way anyone could hear on that phone. "I said we'll call you from California," the woman repeated into the phone, holding it in front of her lips, before returning the receiver to her ear. "Okay, okay, bye." She hung up the receiver. As the couple walked past me, the man gave me a slight bump with his shoulder when I wouldn't step off the sidewalk for him. I flashed my middle finger behind his back. I picked up the phone myself, the buzz of the dial tone whining in my ear. It wasn't even worth using yet, not with the Japanese crowding in close. The children ran wild as their parents called out for them to return to the buses. I leaned against the phone, blocking access to it, but no one cared. In the end, nothing happened. No incident caused by the white American vets down on the pavement beside their wives, backs to the flowing highway traffic, and also no word of surrender or triumph from the Japanese who held the high ground with its fresh water pumps and its running toilets and its most excellent photographic vantage. No one seemed surprised. I was the only one who saw anything at all, who expected something to happen. It wasn't my fault. All I knew of these people was what I'd learned from high school history books, from old war movies, what I'd read in bathroom stalls. I don't just mean the Japanese, I mean the vets too. There simply were no connections in my brain to deal with them. It is honest of me to say that there are many other things like that. Giving up on the telephone, I walked back to my van and reached under the driver's seat for the pint bottle I knew waited for me. I felt every curving ridge along its neck as I raised it to my lips and drank, letting it churn my already volatile stomach. Leaning against the van door, I listened to the bubbling radiator and watched them all, these two groups of real and different people. Just them and then me. Me waiting to use the phone. Me waiting to call my wife. Me waiting for California. I stayed until the vets rode on, until the tour buses followed them out, until I was all alone at the way station. They left me at the same time, and I imagined them racing to the ocean, all these people without any reason left to hate each other, because now they were going to the ocean, to the end of the world, together. Eventually, I left too, but not before I used the payphone, the receiver hot to the touch. She wasn't home. I talked to the answering machine, not remembering exactly what I said. I was drunk, and so it was truth, as true as dreams can be. Christ, I probably never even stopped at that rest stop. I might have been sleeping behind the wheel, or drunk. Maybe I never even called my wife. I don't know. If I did, then what I said was, "Rachel, today the sky was wider than I ever thought possible. It opened and swallowed us all. Out here, the sun loves us so much we burn. There are people going to California. Some of them are Americans. Most of them are real. I'm trying to get better at being both. I miss you. I dreamt last night that I could hear the ocean and that you were there.